Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
The HIV epidemic is not over. HIV is still here.
The face of HIV is so diverse.
The biggest thing to reduce HIV stigma is just to talk about it. Testing and PrEP and HIV treatment and how effective it is today.
Undetectable equals untransmittable. Whether you're positive or negative, there's not a wrong door. Whether it's testing or whether it's treatment, do it for you, Montgomery County.
Learn more about HIV testing, treatment, and prevention at doitforyoumc.org.
Hey everyone, Scott Hansen here from NFL Red Zone. I hope you're checking out 1 hour of 5 Yard Rush, one of the best podcasts on NFL football in the UK.
Yo, what's happening, Rush Nation? We're back. It's Monday night. We've got a guest. Championship weekend is in the books. And man, oh man, do I have one super happy co-host. Big man, how you doing? How was your night? Did you get any sleep? Tell me about it.
It was fine.
You're such a mother.
Well.
All right, fine. How are Bills? how did the Bills go?
Bills game was fine. I mean, they really sort of gave it away and didn't really do a lot. Casey had it in control for the moment. They went up 14-9 and ran it out. No, I'm kidding. Of course, it was a phenomenal night. I couldn't. I was going to try and deadpan it and be really boy. No, it was phenomenal. Of course, to see us make the Super Bowl for the first time in 18 years, to knock off three division champs on the way, to silence that debate of is Aaron Rodgers a truly elite quarterback. I mean, he's a great player. Let's not get this wrong, but I think we can take Aaron Rodgers out of that, best QB of all time conversation, because, you can't go 1-4 in championship games. And it just is the way it goes. You cannot do that and be considered to be one of the greats of all time. We talked about this with Drew Brees. I think Drew Brees is a remarkable person. He's been a very good player, but you cannot not win when it matters and be considered to be one of the, Hall of Fame, sure. Aaron Rodgers will get in the Hall of Fame, whatever happens. But one of the, we're talking about Montana, we're talking about Brady. Do they both deserve to be in that conversation? No. Until they're winning multiple Super Bowls. I mean, Eli Manning's won more Super Bowls than both. In fact, Tom Brady in 1 year in the NFC has won as many NFC titles as both of them. Like, this is what we're talking about, the level here of, it's fine margins between extremely good and greatness. And at this moment in time, they both feel short. But yeah, it's phenomenal to make it. But we're going to share a lot more because we've got a great guest waiting to join us. So let's bring him in.
Absolutely. I didn't want you to do it. Yeah, yeah, I bet he has. And I wanted to bring him in for those thoughts, because otherwise you'd take all the thunder and then we'd just be left hang out to dry. So let's bring today's guest in. It's host of the Read and React podcast, senior writer for DLF and self-affirmed NFL degenerate. It's Tom Kislingbury. Tom, welcome to 5 Yard Rush, man. How are you doing?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for having me on the show. It's good to be here, chaps, especially the day after championship weekend, which is, for my money, joint best football day of the season. You got a Sunday night week one and championship night, and those are my favourites.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, like, Super Bowl is obviously the marquee event. It's incredible. It's phenomenal. But, you know, championship Sunday with everything on the line, it doesn't get more exciting than those two back-to-back games of the AFC NFC championship games. And week one, because you've had this ridiculous 7-month hiatus of football and you're sort of chomping at the bit waiting for it to happen. So I'm with you 100%. Those are the two best days of the year.
Absolutely. Tom, we are going to get into championship weekend a little bit later. Before we do that, why don't you tell Rush Nation how you got into the NFL in the first place?
Well, it was a long time ago, because I'm old, for a start.
This can't be true. This cannot. Young. You cannot be old. I refuse to believe this from the video, Tom, that you were old.
You're a good chap. Thank you very much. It's the moustache hanging around at the moment. It gets away with it. All right. So first game I ever watched in the NFL was the Packers-Patriots Super Bowl. I remember that one, probably before your time, but that was 97. Super Bowl 31, I think it was. And I went to school with a guy. So this was obviously mid-90s. And I went to school with a guy who was a massive NFL fan. He used to wear this Dolphins shell suit coat. It was awful. And everyone took the mickey out of him, because back then it was, wear helmets and what wusses. And eventually, after years, I said, all right, fine, I'll watch a game with you. I was 17 or whatever at this stage, and we stayed up all night and drank a little bit of weak beer. And I watched this game, and he sort of explained what was going on to me. And much to my surprise, it was brilliant. It was really good, and I really enjoyed the game. There was a great kick return that sort of blew the game open, and it was really, really good fun. And from there, it just spiraled, really. I really enjoyed that. Had no idea what was going on, even though someone was explaining it to me. And then I'm a pretty obsessive guy, so I learned more and I learned more. And then after that, I went off to university, and then, you know, I was staying up all night watching football and trying to figure out on Madden what all the different letters and numbers meant, because I had no idea, and the internet just wasn't very helpful back then. And then I learned more and more, and then sort of found my way into the fantasy world and started playing about there, and then really for the last 20 years it's just been learning more and more and more, and here we are. And all I do is watch football, because, you know, we're not allowed out of our house.
I've got a question on that then. So, you know, I started playing fantasy football in the year 2000, but I was in Florida when that happened. So for me, getting access to that kind of information, you go to a Barnes & Noble, they've got plenty of publications of magazines. The internet was, as you say, not very helpful back then. How do you play fantasy football in the late 90s in the UK, where there is no publications and there's no real website to play it on? Or was there a website? Like, how does that even happen?
So we used to play it on a website called Sandbox. This is how long ago it was. Wow. I mean, NFL didn't have its own fantasy, and nice. Sleeper didn't exist, and I'm not sure Yahoo had their own fantasy service. And this thing, Sandbox, is really interesting. And we sort of found it on this proto-internet, and I played it with a couple of mates at university. And it really, the basic experience hasn't changed very much, but we didn't know what some of the things meant, so we had to just work it out. So weirdly, even then, we were playing with defensive positions. And I had my superstar player in that first year was Dwayne Washington, who is old Steelers safety. Really good player, actually. Now I know. I had no idea at the time. But he was DB on the website, right? And I didn't know what DB stood for. And I can remember sitting there in my bedroom in university and doing my depth chart. And I knew I had an LOLB, an LILB, an RILB, an ROLB. I had no idea what they stood for, but I knew I needed to have the numbers. So I sort of looked at their name and I wrote them out my little bit of paper, and then I saw them on the screen. I went, oh, yeah, I can sort of see what was going on here. And then I figured out what linebackers were and all that sort of stuff. But really, a lot of it was just trial and error. And you heard, you know, a game or two every week, and you sort of got bits and pieces and you had to piece it together.
So back then, I mean, I remember the first fantasy league I played in was a manual commish. So we all went to high school, we were all in a class, and the commish would basically take the box scores out of the paper and would update. And basically it'd be posted around, and you'd have a 24-hour period where you could challenge the box score. So basically, if there was an updated box score, basically the most basic form of stat corrections, where the information was wrong, or you find two publications that print different information. That also happened. You'd have to find a third publication to be effectively the tiebreaker. Did you have a commission who worked this out? Did the sandbox work it out? I'm really curious.
It was all automatic. But the reason why I'm laughing at that, we're not too far away from there, right? There's so many stats that are still disputed in the NFL, and we still like to believe that things are official. But so much, certainly on the defensive side of the football, and we'll get onto that, so much of it interpretive, because the tackle is not an official NFL stat. Sure, you guys know that. And all the stat crews sort of do it differently. And now we're seeing that happen with pressures as well. So it feels like the wider football sphere has figured out that sacks are not the be-all and end-all, and you need to understand sort of pressures and QB hits and that sort of stuff. But it's still some bloke that's been working for the stat crew for 30 years, and he's got an idea of what he thinks, and he's going to stick with it. And the Wembley crew is notoriously different. So it's still subjective. This is the best part of 25 years later, and we've still got the same problems, which feels absolutely incredible.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I was curious on that because it's just, yeah, it's such an amazing period. I think, you know, if you've been through that level of fantasy, you know you're a proper addict, because, you know, it's not like it is now. Kids today don't know what they were born with sleeper and nice colorful graphics with full information at one touch of a button, not having to just guess on who players are.
Yeah, it was a different world, man. But it was a lot of fun. It was so different because we'd never seen anything like it. And, you know, I can remember when soccer fantasy football sort of started over here, and that was crazy. But then we discovered the US way of doing it, and that sort of concept of everyone owning one player, and that was like, wow, totally changes your mind.
So you say that with soccer fantasy football. I'll never forget, I was in school, and we were talking off air about schools, and, you know, my mum sent me to Catholic school. You know, when I first went there, I was 11, and we did it by post. So you'd pay like £2 a week. And you'd get this thing through the post every single week, and you'd have your team, and you'd send in your selections, and you could do transfers with other people. So there was like, I think there were 8 in my class and 4 more in my year that were part of this sort of 20-man league. We used to do it all by post. You just think now, it's just baffling. You just give me like, right, flash down memory lane. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I did one through my cousin's secondary school, where we filled it in one drunken night. I sent him my team sheet, and then the only way I could get an update was for him to look at the cork board in the corridor of his high school and then to phone me on the landline phone to tell me how I was doing. It was terrible. I came rock bottom last. It was dreadful. But yeah, things have definitely moved on. How did you get into writing about fantasy football and then writing for DLF, Tom?
So the first half, it was just for fun, really.
Such a good answer. Everyone is just for fun.
Yeah, it literally was. I was quite into fantasy, and I was doing a lot of research, and I was trying to learn. So, you know, my sort of obsessive brain wants to learn about stuff, and it always wants to pick up new. So I was figuring out what I could about predicting football and that sort of stuff. And after I did quite a lot of studying and thought I knew what was going on, then I was scrolling stuff down because I saw all these football writers, and I thought, these guys are pretty clever. I wish I could uncover things like that. And, you know, you have a lot of arguments and conversations with your mates, but it was pretty clear that I viewed football in a different way to a lot of them. And I got fed up with those arguments, so I just started screaming it into the void on a little personal website. Nobody was reading it. It didn't go anywhere. But then there was an ad that came out from DLF, and they said, we want some new writers. And I thought, oh, send it in, might as well. And I did that, and they said, yeah, welcome aboard. On the back of, you know, I'd put some things together, and it was on a website, and you could read it, and it sort of made sense. And it was maybe in areas that other people weren't looking at, i.e. defense, because people like to pretend that only players who touch the ball count. And then it just blew up, really. And then DLF is just such a lovely family of guys. It's a really nice website, just run by, three original partners and a couple of other guys that have come on board who just love football. And no one ever pressures you to write about anything. And they'll sort of let you go with your flights of fancy of things that you think are interesting. It's really supportive, nice group of people. So that sort of happened. And then eventually, Gridiron Magazine launched in the UK, and I sort of knew what they were going on, and I was reading there, and they had some really good stuff. And I thought, some of the things that I look at, which is bit more data-based and a bit more evidence rationally, I reckon that would fit. So I just dropped him a line. They went, yeah, come on, come and do some stuff. And the more I've learned about the football business, I mean, if I was 20 years younger, I would definitely be trying to do a football full-time as a career, but that's not going to happen. So much of it is just asking people. And, you know, we as people tend to think we're so special and wonderful, and all these people are going to realize it and come knock on my door and say, you're great, come and do this stuff for us. And obviously no one ever does. But actually, in the football world in particular, if you just ask people and you say, I think I can help you, give me a shot, most people normally say yes.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I you know, it's really special. This, we talk about it a lot on here. You know, some of the people we've had on in the last sort of 3 years, you know, we had two guys talking about football, and then we get, you know, incredible people on to come and talk about it and share experiences. And that's how you learn. And you just, I just think of the football community, especially the fantasy football community, is one big like group thing, group tank. Like everyone just gets together, and there's no, people think there's like loads of animosity between different sites and competition. It just isn't like, it just isn't that way. People just like to share their thoughts, and they're willing to have them completely carved up by other people, and they want to learn, and they want to learn the process. They want to know why they got things wrong. I think, you know, one of the things whenever anyone asks me, you know, why'd you do it, is it, one, other than it's fun, and it's I've got nothing better to do really that I love, that I mean like I wouldn't want to talk about soccer all day every day despite how obsessed I am with it, because I just think it's too many opinions. Like, it's the complete opposite. If you look at the soccer landscape, everyone has an opinion and no one is willing to change their mind, whereas the football space, and mostly the fantasy football space, I feel most people are quite curious because they want that edge, they want to compete. And
I think we're quite close to figuring stuff out as well in the NFL world. So a lot of other sports, you sort of understand what happens, and they're fairly simple. A lot of teams end up playing very similarly. So let's use soccer as an example, right? You go through these swathes of everyone using very similar formations and very similar philosophies. And there's obviously differences. That's always going to happen. But you sort of go through decades at a time where people behave very, very similarly until someone figures out a way of breaking it, and that changes. But it's not quick. And you look at the NFL, and I'm talking about college and high school and the NFL all together in football here, and it's rapid. You see new trends in personnel packages and formations and approaches and plays happen in weeks, not months, not years. And you have to adapt to it, because if someone comes up with something clever, that kills your game. That is a game beater just then. It's not one tiny thing that goes into a massive variant system that might have 10% chance of breaking your system. It will kill you. The great example is the Wildcat game, right? Ever remember that, when Miami wheeled it out and they scored four touchdowns using it against that great New England team? And suddenly everyone was like, we've got to learn this thing next week, because we're either going to see it or we're going to beat someone with it. And that lasted about 6 months and then it disappeared. And there's loads of other examples, but it feels like the truth is not something we know in football. We don't understand the links between things. So yeah, it's really only in recent years that people have properly understood, this is a controversial point of view, but how little running backs matter, right? Obviously, great running backs, they're a great player, but pretty much whoever you plug in there, volume equals productivity and blah, blah, blah. We can talk about that all day. But for decades, and maybe the game was different then, that wasn't the case. People are like, yeah, of course I'm going to draft my running back overall, because look, he's really good. He carries the ball. I know a guy that's convinced Kalen Ballage was really good this year. And he puts on the game, and he sees Kalen Ballage pick up the ball and sort of run past the tackler. And he must be good. So the things we're learning about the sport just feel like you're always discovering new things, rather than just ploughing over tired old ground that's been done 30 years ago in a slightly different way.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's so true that evolution is so quick. But what I also find fascinating is people then always go back in NFL and college is something that hasn't been tried for like 15 years. Someone has dug it out and gone, I wonder if I modify that slightly, that will work now. And that's what I think is cool, because you can start to see some trends where you can start to work out the root and the ancestry of where this crazy idea has come from. And then you just watch it slightly tweaked, but and then brought back. And that's what I love. I just think it's reinvention, it's creativity. And, you know, I had a lot of friends last night who know me very well, and you know, didn't know me when Tampa won the first Super Bowl. So, you know, been talking about it a lot, and a lot of them don't watch NFL, and you know, they thought they'd watch it in the sort of solidarity with me. It's like, well, let's see what this is about. And a lot of it, you know, a lot of these guys love soccer. They don't really watch NFL. And they're like, actually, yeah, while the ad breaks are a little bit annoying, I actually now start to appreciate how much drama and tension that they build because of all the different strategy points. And it's like, if you can get people to understand that the pauses in play are so necessary in order for it to be such an amazing experience, people will just, because that's the number one barrier to people in the UK, is it's 3 hours long, there's an hour of that's ad breaks, I just don't think I could be asked. And then you're just like, actually, if you can just get past that one bit and actually understand why that is the way it is, you'll love it. And I think, I mean, I know some guys who watched it last night who go, I'm gonna watch more NFL now, I'm gonna watch the Super Bowl, I'm gonna watch other games, because they understand the strategy, the creativity of it. And that's why the sport is so unique compared to basketball, baseball, soccer, because of the amount of creativity that's done through organization planning, coming up with plays, etc.
I agree. I think that's what makes it such a good sport for spectators, because, you know, a lot of people who are super sports fans are sort of frustrated players, right? I was never very good as a player. But when I watch the NFL, I can sort of believe that, you know, fine, I could never go out there and do those things, but I'm pretty clever. I bet I could call those plays. And it has much more impact than it does in most sports. Most sports, your coach can sort of wave his fingers and shout, but really he's 5% of the input. And the NFL is a tangible difference on a play-by-play basis. And you can see proof. I would have called this play on that. Well, he did the same thing and it didn't work, so I was wrong.
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
100%.
So if you were going to coach a team, Tom, who would your team be and who is your NFL team be?
A good question. So I was going to say my standard answer for this. I don't really have a team. So I watched that first game in 97 and I said to my buddy, Craig, I said, where's Green Bay? I've never heard of Green Bay. And he said, it's in the middle of the country somewhere. You've never heard of it. I said, great, where's New England? Didn't know where New England was. And he said, that was Boston, really. I went, great, I've been to Boston. I'll have them. And he went, they've never won a Super Bowl. This is the second one they've ever been to. And the first was a record loss and they've sucked forever. I said, oh man, this sucks. But I was a Patriots fan by then, right? So I picked it. And then Belichick turned up 3 or 4 years later and he started getting really good. And the next 10 years, everyone's like, you only follow the Patriots because they're brilliant. I was like, I've got all the pain of this and I don't feel like I've got any of the glory really either. And so they were my favorite team for a long time. But I sort of realized that I enjoyed football more when I wasn't cheering for a team. And this is a good time, championship weekend. So I mean, obviously you're celebrating because your team got back to the Super Bowl. Brilliant. But I see so many people that have decided they're going to pick a certain team and are going to be massively loyal to them. And I hate the team that they hate. And they don't enjoy football that much. Yeah. They find a lot of it being quite frustrated and quite upset. I've got a great buddy of mine, Rusty, who's been a Dolphins fan for 30 years. And he's rarely happy following football because the only thing that makes him happy is Dolphins winning. It doesn't happen very often. So I can understand if you're born into it and sort of tribalism is really appropriate. And some people can only do that. They can only enjoy a game if they're cheering for someone and cheering against the other one. But I have found sport is better that way. So college football is a good thing, right? You start getting into college football and your instinct is going, well, I'm going to pick a college. And then I thought about it and went, that's really weird. It's really strange if I pick a university that I've never been anywhere near. And I'll either pick a top tier one, Bama or Ohio State or someone like that, which sort of misses the point, or I'll pick someone rubbish and they're never going to be any good. And either way, it's really strange. But I don't actually have to. I can just watch college football and just cheer for good football. And I find I enjoy that a lot more. Now, having said that, I'm sitting here with a Patriots hat next to me. So, you know, a little bit of that sort of still kicks around. And I've got a Gronk mug downstairs. You never quite divorce. If I was watching a playoff game between the Jets and the Patriots, then it'd be pretty clear who I'm cheering for. But last 2 years, I was cheering for the Chiefs to beat the Patriots in the playoffs because I wanted to see Mahomes do really well. And I wanted to see the Chiefs go back to the Super Bowl.
That makes sense. I think I understand that. And I think, I'm not that person because I just get emotionally attached. But at the same point, I totally understand the tribalism. And I think that's one of the things I really love about the NFL is a very small percentage of the fan base is tribalistic. You've got people here in the UK that are very, very ardent fans. And I've noticed a lot of this morning, pro and con Tom Brady and, you know, trying to sway people to not hate Tom Brady because he's so successful, but it can't be done. And that's fine. But I think, you know, Lee's a Dolphins fan, Stock's Denver fan. You know, I'm a Buccaneers fan. I picked them because I live there. You know, I live so close to them, and that was my local team. It's how I picked them. And Lee goes to games all the time. And, you know, I think we're the sorts of fans that we've seen so much of the bad. We've seen so much of the bad that it's like, no matter what, I can always enjoy it. And I think what I love about the NFL and the culture of it is because it's not so tribalistic, I can watch any game and love it. And when it comes to soccer in particular, and the culture here in this country is, that's not the case because you're always rooting for one team over the other. If Manchester United are playing Sheffield United, you know, all the other top six teams are rooting for Sheffield United. You know, you don't have that independent view. Whereas I can watch, as you say, the Patriots and the Jets. And for me, I just want a good game. I don't really care who wins. Yeah, I have favorite players and there's fantasy and all those sorts of things. But in all actuality, I actually separate fantasy completely from my NFL watching experience. So like, I'm not the guy who is on my app looking at my fantasy team when I'm watching the games.
No, turn it off, man. Yeah, look at it on Tuesday morning, but just enjoy football whilst it's happening.
I'm totally with you. Stocks goes to me, he says, oh, yeah, we'll be in a heads-up match. You'd be like, oh, you've got this game won. And I was like, I've not even looked. I just enjoy watching the games, and it's special. And I think that's what, again, the sport is special for.
I mean, you understand it from, there are different sorts of fans, and actually, across lots of different sports, different sorts of fans are emerging. Certainly in the UK and Europe, we are turning into more delineated fans. And it used to be massively dominated by, you know, people that the sort of fever pitch classic. I just love my team. I live through my team. And that's it. And those people are fading. And there are more and more fans that are appearing who are strategy fans or scouts or people that are just in it for the social life, and et cetera, or gambling or gaming fans are there. So it is diversifying. I think it helps the fan experience that it's becoming less about my team's great and your team sucks. And you can still get a lot of that, but it's quite boring. It only goes so far.
No, I agree.
Let's leave some pandemic talk out because we've all had enough corona, right? 2020 Fantasy Tom, how did your season go? How many leagues were you in? Did you win any leagues? Fill us in.
You know, it was not bad in the end. It sort of works out well. I think I played, I don't know the exact number because I'm a degenerate and we've all got the sickness, right? It was probably about 15. And that sort of combination of some best ball leagues where you haven't got to touch them and some work ones and some old mates ones and stuff because someone says, do you want to do this interesting thing? So a bunch of them. And I think I won three. I can't actually remember the last one, which is terrible. But I did pretty well in best ball leagues. And I'm good at building a really good roster. Because I look at stupid details, so I sort of know everyone that's playing every week. So figuring out who that next guy is up, I'm really good at. Actually, weekly sit starts, terrible. Not your guy at all. I can't do that at all. And I tend to suck at it. So I sort of did well in different sorts of leagues, but it was such a hard season this year, right? Because it was so different to normal and so many things were just weird in the NFL and injury rates and people going on and off COVID lists and all that sort of thing. So what a weird year. We're not going to, I'm pretty convinced that next year the NFL is going to start and people are going to go, hang on, why are all these offensive players not producing as well as they did last year? Because they've got no idea that defense just sucked in 2020 because of the offseason. And they've got probably no idea how lax the NFL were on penalties as well. And so people are going to go, I thought that guy was really good. I thought he broke out last year and suddenly he's not as good. And people are going to be confused.
It's definitely going to be confusing draft season next year. And going into the first few weeks, people are going to be, there could be players dropped that we just think, well, why have you dropped him? Because your average guy isn't playing like we are and has dropped this guy. And people, it's going to be a waiver wire storm and it's going to be madness. Let's dive into championship weekend then. Did you watch both games? Have you seen any highlights? He definitely watched both games if you're not watching on the video.
Yeah, so, I mean, are you a football fan if you don't watch on Championship weekend? Really? Can you claim it? Not sure.
I take offence, Tom, if I'm honest. No, I had to look after my son today, so the second game was not an option live for me. But
it was a long day today. Yeah, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, so what did you make of it?
I just really enjoyed it. I thought the first game was absolutely brilliant. I'm sure there was a load of mistakes, but really enjoyed it. Whenever you get to Championship Weekend, all the stories are about, you know, four quarterbacks. But actually, I thought it was a fascinating clash. Again, I'm a massive defense fan, and there's such distinctive defenses in Tampa versus Green Bay. Green Bay's defense looks like nobody else in the league. It's probably the most unique defense in the league, and I think it's pretty cutting edge and pretty exciting, so I love watching them. And then Tampa, we know what Todd Bowles does. He blitzes. He's one of the more aggressive coordinators. And to see that play out in real time with very good quarterback play, I just thought it was fascinating. And everyone's jumped on Kevin King and sort of painted him as the villain. And yeah, he had a couple of terrible mistakes. I thought Carlton Davis was awful. Yeah. I'm a huge Carlton Davis fan. He's such that template of a long 6'3", brilliant cover corner. But yesterday he sucked.
No, he was, I mean, he was terrible. Lucky. I mean, for me, there was only one bit of coverage I sort of liked. I looked at it. And it was, I think it was on third down, and he didn't get fooled by Adams moving, and he covered him in the end zone and took him out effectively from being able to be passed to. And I think that was in like the third or the fourth quarter. I think it was the fourth quarter. And you sit, no, it was third. It was third quarter, and you're just like, it's taking you that long to show up. I mean, he just he couldn't tackle. He got beat inside. He got beat outside. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't aggressive at all. And it's not what we've seen out of Carlton Davis this season. I don't know if he got scared or, you know, got beat early by Adams and thought, I've got to be a bit careful here. The helmet to helmet was inexcusable. I'm with you. It was a tough watch. And yet, but it was amazing for me to see so many defensive personnel changes as well. I mean, you had force changes from the Buccaneers side with different safeties coming in. You had, you know, you could definitely see Mike Pettine realize that he can't give up 186 yards of rush before contact like he did last year. And I actually think Mike Pettine did a really good job, with the exception of that play before halftime. I think that was the
Christian
only
Kirksey good. I mean, yeah, he's really had a really good. Difficult year. The second half of it's been really problematic for him, but I thought he was brilliant last night.
Yeah, exceptional. You know, you look at it and people will sit there and point at King, and yeah, okay, he gets beat one or twice, but I also think that the coverage didn't help him that much either. I mean, if you're going to give the yards to Scotty Miller, he's going to get past you. You know, he's a speed freak. But at the end of the day, I thought that they really contained Brady. They forced him into mistakes, especially the first and the third turnover, because they started getting to him. It took him a while, mm-hmm. but when they started getting to him and they dialed up the pressure and they started getting in his face, you know, people sitting there like, oh, Brady sucks. Well, no, Brady's just not very good when a guy is right in his face. That's been his entire career.
Every quarterback sucks when there's a guy exactly. right in his face.
You need to have an offensive line that are going to keep him clean, and that's how he wins games. And when you get dirty with him, then that's when you can get a turnover or two off him. And yeah, I felt bad for the Packers D last night, because I think, with the exception of...
Sorry, you got me excited here. Long-term Patriots fan, you talked about getting dirty with Tom Brady. I need a moment.
I don't blame you. With the exception of three or four plays last night, I thought that the Green Bay defense was very good. You know, it's just unfortunate for them that their offense couldn't get the job done. I mean, not for me, but for them. I feel like their offense, Aaron Rodgers in particular, I think probably deserves a bit of criticism this morning and this evening or tomorrow, or whenever you're analyzing this game, because they had the opportunities to win this game.
They did. I haven't seen many championship games, apart from the fact last time the Packers were there, where both teams don't have a chance to win it. So I'm a bit more tolerant of Aaron Rodgers than you. It wasn't his best game, but that's going to happen. Quarterback's going to have bad games. And certainly when they come up against, I'm not sure, one of the best defense in the league, but top five, top six, the Bucs were over the course of the year. It's a super hard thing to do. So I don't think either quarterback was really much worse than I expected them to be. I think it was just a good close tussle. Even on the scoreboard, it didn't look like it at times. Really enjoyed that game. I thought it was fascinating.
I got a question for you, because this is the one that I think most people want to talk about, is going for it on 4th and 8 and versus not going for it on 4th and 8 and kicking the field goal with 2:05 left on the clock, or 2:09 or whenever it was when they kicked the ball. Do you I mean, could you see the logic of that call at the time? Or do you just think, and you're a defensive guy, so you know, LaFleur's made this decision basing on the fact that he's got four stops with the timeouts and the 2-minute warning, and he's backing his defense.
Nah, I go for it. Yeah. So I spend a lot of time on defense, but that leads me to being aware of how variable and how futile defense is. You know, offense rules the modern NFL. It definitely does. And in 2020, more than any season that I've watched football for a start. So I'm very much in the camp of if you've got a play to go out there and do it, then trust your offense, because your defense is subject to so many vagaries of fate that trusting on that to win you a game feels very old-fashioned to me. Easy for me to say, though, right? We sit here on a sofa and go, yeah, I'd make these big things, because I'm not worried about my career getting blackballed on the back of a terrible decision on national airtime. But on the flip side, then that gives us the freedom to see what is best without having an emotional stake in it. And those guys can't. So did you see the comment from, what's his name, new Chargers coach this week, who was saying, yeah, I really want to be at the forefront of analytics. But I'm also going to, you know, judge that in the moment based on feel. And again, well, that's sort of the opposite of what you're saying. And there's no right and there's no wrong here. I'm not saying, you know, always trust the numbers. But there's no point in saying, yeah, I'm absolutely going to trust the math and numbers unless it feels wrong, because that's the whole point of when you need to make an analytical decision.
And I think based on that, I think the real mistake that LaFleur made last night, it wasn't that he didn't go for it. It's the fact is he's sitting there with three timeouts and he should have taken one, because you can tell he hedged his bets. He wasn't sure. And what he did is he made a panicked rush decision, which turns out to be the wrong play. Listen, they could have gone for it. They could have missed it. They had seven or eight shots from that sort of distance and didn't score before that. So it's not exactly like this was a given on 4 and 8, but he didn't give himself the time. Like, and this is, for me, the biggest difference in this whole game was this one point. The Buccaneers send the punt team out. They have a play they really, really like. They decide to change it. They call the timeout before halftime. Then they send Tom Brady out. They go for it on 4th and 3. They get it. Next play, touchdown the end zone, take a big lead into halftime. And then, but they took the timeout. They decided they're not going to panic. They have a play they really like. They thought, why not? Let's just go for it. We're here once. But they took the timeout to really analyze that decision. Matt LaFleur, in the same situation, panics, goes with the first thing that goes into his head, I think, and thinks, well, I've got four stops. I fancy our defense to make the stop here, despite the fact that Brady was never three and out in the whole game. I just think, yeah, I just think if you take the time out,
it's going to go
there,
down as the wrong thing. But I think understand it, right?
Yeah, 100%.
And LaFleur's a second-year head coach, and he's never been in this position before. And Bruce Arians has built his entire head coaching career on being a YOLO guy. Yeah. You know, his offense is built around converting third and long. So something like that happens to him, he's probably fine with it.
But I think you've just got to take the time out, because I think even if he then decides to go and kick it, you've given yourself the time to have worked out every scenario, to think it out and go, this is too big a moment to decide in 15 seconds. You need to really just take that minute and just go, I'm going to go with this decision. Because then you can go into your press conference and say, look, I took the time. The reason I did this is this, and not be panicked, because at least you can live and die by that decision, because you were 100% committed to that idea. I'm not so sure on the floor. Or LaFleur was 100% committed to the idea. I think he came out and he made that decision really quickly and was like, well, we're just going to do it because this is the scenario and I back us to do it, but didn't think about all the other consequences. Because it's hard. It's 10, 15 seconds. You've got every camera in the world. You've got 300 million people watching you. It's not, you know, I'm not criticizing him for not making the decision quickly. I just think he should have bought himself some time to really decide what was best.
And it's a high-pressured 10 or 15 seconds as well. It's not as if you've got 10 or 15 seconds to think about that decision. You are right there, and it's
going. He's
talking
to a dozen people. He's got people left, right, and centre. He's got people in his ear. Yeah, it's a tough thing. I just think in that situation, take the time out. And then if you get it wrong, you've really thought about it. And you can live and die by that decision. I think, you know, McDermott did the same thing in when they were not on that game yet. But before halftime, he took a time out. They went for the field goal, and he says, look, 100% now in this press conference, I would do that again, because we hadn't scored points. We needed points on the board before the half. because we knew we weren't getting the ball back straight away. I would never change that decision. You go, well, listen, everyone can criticize him for not going for it before the half, but he's already, you know, he is where he is for a reason. He's a very good football coach. He took his time. He made the decision that he felt was best and he didn't panic. I can't question that call because I'm not in that position. And he took the time to really think about it.
Yeah. I think the thing for me that was obvious about the Green Bay game was the St. Brown drop in the end zone was horrendous. And the MVS long touchdown, if the tackle's made there, it isn't a touchdown. So Green Bay desperately, desperately need to find Addis some help in the offseason.
They loved MVS yesterday, didn't they? They were using him a bunch. A part of that is because he's got yellow boots. So you always see him on the field. But I thought they were much more confident in him than I expected them to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was phenomenal. You know, he found the gaps. He knew exactly where to... And he read the coverage well, I think. I think he definitely knew exactly how to get free, where to get his yards, and he did very well yesterday. I think he had a great game.
But he's that kind of player, isn't he? He's
streaky.
He's willful at 2.0, essentially.
Yeah.
Let's talk some Bills Chiefs then before it turns to dawn here, guys. What was your thoughts on that, Tom?
Let's start with the quarterbacks because you've got two in a game with Mahomes. I'm not as convinced on Josh Allen as many people are. He absolutely turned it around and he went from having a terrible first two seasons to having a brilliant third season. And all of his supporters will say, well, there's always flashes. He always looked good. Okay, I couldn't see it, but you know, maybe that's just me. That happens a lot with football. I think a lot of what fueled him this year was 2020. Just being sort of blown up. I think everyone looks a bit better offensively. He was the biggest recipient of it, but I'm not a giant fan. He's a good quarterback now. He's top 12 quarterback in the NFL, which is amazing considering where he was a year ago. But when you come up against someone like Patrick Mahomes, who is pretty much a surefire Hall of Famer already, then that's not what you need. So at the start of the show, we were talking about the difference between a really, really good Hall of Fame quarterback versus the best ever. And they're small margins. But again, we see this every year. It's not just about who has the best quarterback, but it gives you a massive advantage. And when there's such a discrepancy as that, I think you've got a lot to carry back. So it was a fascinating game, but the Chiefs basically went, look, we've got a quarterback and two offensive players who no one on the other team can match up with. No one can run with them at all. So we'll just keep doing that until you can stop it. And the Bills never really stops it.
No. I felt like with the Bills, they'd made a decision before the game. It's like, right, we're not going to give you a 60-yard, 70-yard touchdown. You can throw the ball down the middle. You can take your 10, 15-yard plays. We're going to back ourselves to stop you in the red zone, but we're not going to give you cheap scores. You're going to have to put drives on. And so Mahomes has gone, well, I've got Kelsey. I back him to beat anyone that you've got in coverage.
Right.
There you go. There you go.
It was simple. It
was such an easy game plan. I'm sitting there thinking, like, this isn't how you beat the Chiefs. You have to be aggressive. You have to be dialing up pressure. You have to be really getting to Mahomes, and he's a difficult person to get to, as we've seen hundreds of times before.
Well, and that was the other difference as well, that just difference in pass rush. So the Chiefs defense is a league average defense, but they played really well last night. And the Bills, for my money, are one of the probably handful, two or three most conservative defenses in the NFL. So they're up there with the Colts as basically doing the same thing all the time. And it doesn't change much, and their personnel are very, very rigid, and their package is not crazy, and they don't show a lot of variation in their pass rush or their coverage. And I think it came back to haunt them. I thought in that game against the Colts, they were very close to going out of the playoffs at the start because neither of those teams is very good. And they're a bit too vanilla, and every coach takes over a defense, and they go, we're going to be really aggressive. We're not going to be defensive, vanilla on defense, because the fans love to hear it. But if you are, that's sort of what it looks like. And it can make you look pretty good in the regular season, but you're going to get found out in January when you come up against the really good teams in the big moments. And the Chiefs pass rush stood up. I thought they were phenomenal really rushing good. The passer. With, frankly, some fairly average talent. I don't think any of their players, bar Chris Jones, are brilliant pass rushers. But they showed up and it worked.
Yeah, I think spot on. I think that's exactly... Yeah, I think it makes for a fascinating game in 2 weeks' time. Obviously, you've now got this Todd Bowles defense with two pretty talented I mean, it's a 3-4, so you can't call them both edge rushers, but JPP and Shaq Barrett there with Devin Wright coming.
I would strongly call them both edge rushers.
It's always the debate, isn't it? Because I would, and I always do, but I know sometimes I've said that and people have disagreed strongly. But
kind of I'm willing to have that argument with anybody who wants to.
But, you know, you sit here, it's a different type of game. What is your gut saying? And appreciate, you know, it's a very interesting matchup. We had this matchup 2 months ago. Chiefs won it in the first quarter. You know, the rest of the game after that is irrelevant. I know the Bucks came back and made it close, but really the game was done. Do you see a route to?
No, Chiefs again for me. I think it will be. I think it'll be within 7 or 8 points because they're both really good teams. But I definitely favour the Chiefs to win this one, I'm afraid. And the reason is because the Buccaneers' defence has been so good this year because of consistency. So the great thing that we underrate in terms of how good defence is just not getting injuries and players not missing. So you go back to you remember the 2017 Jaguars, one of the best defences in recent years. No one got hurt. They basically played the same player every single snap for the whole year. The Bears in 2018 were very, very similar. Even the Patriots last year. A lot of defences who are spectacular just happen to have the same guys out there the whole time. And we tend to believe in personal player wonderfulness. This guy is really good, and therefore it doesn't matter if the other 10 players suck. He's really good, so they're a good defense. And that's just not true. But the Buccaneers are one of those defenses. They have a couple of really good players. Shaq Barrett has been phenomenal this year. Absolutely love him. Lavonte David was as well. I'm not a huge Devin White fan, but it's mainly a defense that works so well because it's very consistent and it's very reliable. Now, fine, they're reliable because they blitz a lot. They blitz in unexpected ways, but when I'm talking about reliable, I don't mean doing the same thing every time. I mean having a very strong system and sticking to it and being fairly happy with how that's proven it wins. But that's up against an offense, and we've talked about it, that can win in 5 different ways. And it's an offense that is built on Mahomes being the best quarterback in the league. It's not that close. And Tyreek Hill, awful person that he is, but whatever. And Travis Kelce being essentially uncoverable one-on-one. The Buccaneers do not have a single player that you can be comfortable going one-on-one for the whole game against those two and not getting burnt. They don't. At his best, Carlton Davis can probably keep up with Tyreek Hill, but you know, over 50 or 60 snaps, no. Putting my money on Hill easily. Definitely with Kelce, I'm not sure who gets that. I mean, maybe it's David, but basically they're gonna have to be really clever and try and adjust their system to be built around a couple of star receivers that can bust the game open at any one point. And I don't think that's the Buccaneers' defense game. Now, normally, when you have a game that's great offense against great defense, it's the other units that work really well, right? So the Chiefs' defense up against the Buccaneers' offense. And that's probably closer. I do think the Bucs will have some joy there as well. But I think it'd be similar to yesterday. I think you've got a really good team in the Bucs coming up against a great offense who just don't really have any answers to them.
I think the one X factor player for me in this game is Vita Vea. And we saw this yesterday. When Vita Vea is in, Shaq Barrett gets released. He gets a lot less pressure because Vita Vea is just, I mean, Steve McClendon did a great job. I mean, that trade to bring McClendon in when Vea goes down is an incredible bit of business because you've basically swapped 6th and 7th round picks. I mean, like, to get a guy who is going to come in, and he did an excellent job, but he's not Vita Vea. Vita Vea, when he comes in, he massively releases Shaq Barrett to do what he does best. And we saw this yesterday. I think if Vita Vea is not in this game, Shaq Barrett isn't as effective. And, you know, you look at the numbers in the 22 games that Vea and Shaq Barrett have played together. Shaq Barrett has 25.5 sacks.
I mean, but Shaq Barrett was really effective whilst Vita Vea was out most of the season, though, as well.
Yeah, no, he was. But I just think it really frees up Shaq Barrett even more because of the amount of manpower it takes to really deal with Sue and Vea. They just really allow that little half step or whatever it is, that little slight edge. It's so minimal, but it's enough to just get Shaq Barrett to be extra effective. And I think for me, I mean, I don't think the Chiefs are going to do much on the ground. The same way that they didn't in Tampa in week 12. I don't think they're going to do much on the ground. They don't need to. They don't need to, but I think if they need to get cheap first downs, they're going to find that tough on the ground. So they're going to have to do it through the air. I'm with you. I think that the Chiefs are definitely the better team.
It's going to come down to plays, right? And we might see a couple of random turnovers and weird things will happen. Yeah. But on the face of it, I feel pretty comfy with the Chiefs having the edge.
It's fair enough. I'm not picking them for obvious reasons, but that's heart over head for sure.
It's a head over heart decision for the podcast, Murph, because my head says Chief for all the reasons Tom says, and then my heart says, well, I've got to go with the big man and I'm going to be a Buccaneer come Super Bowl Sunday. So
just be another really good game. Last year was one of my favorite Super Bowls because I went into it and there were so many reasons to be really happy for the Niners or the Chiefs to win that title. Mm-hmm. I spent the whole game just going, it's fine, no problem. I'm going to be chuffed for whoever it happens. And it's pretty similar this year. I mean, the Bucs didn't win a playoff game from 2002 to this season, which seems absolutely crazy. But who doesn't like this Bucs team? So I will be more than happy if I'm wrong. And it should just be a good game.
Yeah. For me, I want Brady to win a Super Bowl with another team. And luckily for us, Murph, it is the Buccaneers. Because that will just rubber stamp the fact that he is the greatest of all time to play it. And I'd love to see Patrick Mahomes win it back to back and go on and win 10 because he could be the generational Tom Brady that we'll see in our generation.
Mahomes is 10 or 15 years to go exactly. And win 4 or 5 more.
I want Brady to win this one for you, Murph, but I also want it to win it for him because I want him to finally, as much as it was the Belichick-Brady thing, to go and then do it in Tampa. It separates him from Belichick. And yes,
I've got two facts on this. Two bits on this. First, a fact that Tom Brady is only the second quarterback to go to the Super Bowl with an NFC and an AFC team. The other being Joe Montana, who did it with the 49ers for many, many years, and then ironically did it with the Chiefs. No quarterback has ever won both the AFC and the NFC, or won the Super Bowl with both an AFC and an NFC team, at least since the merger. And the other thing that is, everyone is talking about how much they love Mahomes now. Purists, and I think we can all agree that we're purists here, won't ever hate Mahomes. But the general consensus is, I think in 5 years' time, if we were all to sit back and come back on this podcast, the general consensus on Patrick Mahomes is that people will be very, very bored of him winning games. He's going to get maybe not quite as much hatred as Tom Brady, but people in the NFL like the new shiny thing. And Patrick Mahomes is still that to a degree. And I think he will be for another year or two. But I tell you now, if he wins 3 Super Bowls straight, people will be very tired of him. And, you know, people are going to laugh at me saying this, but there are going to be people that are going to absolutely hate Patrick Mahomes simply because he's just phenomenal and he's unlike any player to have ever played the game.
We see it in every sport. The champion is always hated, regardless of how nice a guy Patrick Mahomes may be. Like you say, in 3 years' time, if he's won 3, it's just going to be, well, they're boring like the Patriots were.
I still want him to get 57 regular season touchdowns so that Heinz give him a lifetime supply of ketchup. I still want that to happen. I was gutted a couple of years ago when it didn't work in his MVP year, but I'm praying one day. I'd love to see him get the 57 and Heinz pay up on that bet.
Was that a lifetime?
Back
was
in it? Texas Tech.
Yeah. Tom, you've come on to talk IDP because you love IDP football. We've obviously gathered that from our conversation so far. We've run massively into this podcast already. So I'm going to put it out there already. I'm going to say, will you come back and talk about IDP again? We will talk about it now, but I feel like there's 2 episodes at least for us to talk IDP.
Yeah, of course, man. My greatest crusade in football is get people to care about defense. So yeah, I'm always, always happy to do that.
Superb news. I love IDP. I think my favorite format of football is Superflex IDP. Let's talk to IDP then. So you are, as we've mentioned, an IDP nut. For our listeners who perhaps have not been brave enough to branch into IDP, have no idea what it is yet, have been listening to this and thinking, what am I listening to? Explain why they should get into it and what IDP is, essentially, for those who don't know.
Let's start with what it is. IDP is individual defensive player, right? So instead of having team defense, then you have individual players, so your defensive end, your linebacker, your cornerback, your safety, et cetera, et cetera. The other question I'm going to refuse to answer a little bit. So the question is often, why should you care about IDP? I think it's the wrong question. I think the better question is why do we not, which is really weird. If you were creating fantasy football now, then you'd go, well, I want to give people the feeling of being a GM or a head coach and sort of give them access to all those things in football. And you'd include defense as part of that. The reason it didn't happen when it was dreamed up in, you know, depending which legend you believe in, a restaurant in San Francisco or New Jersey or whatever it was 30 years ago, it's because nobody had any numbers. We talked at the start of the show about defensive stats being unreliable, and that was crazy 30, 40 years ago. Nobody knew anything. So they basically went, all we can do is count touchdowns. Most early fantasy leagues were just touchdowns. There was nothing else. It wasn't yardage or points per reception, any of that. It was just counting touchdowns. So there was no opportunity to do it. Where I am now is if you're a fan of football, if you like the sport, I'm assuming the route is basically I like football and therefore I want to play fantasy because I feel closer to football, then shouldn't you be closer to all football rather than just, you know, I love football but only the guys that touch the ball. And quite often you see, you know, Twitter's a bad place for this. They go, I'm gonna touch on every position on this team or whatever, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end. There you go, I'm done. And you're like, oh, what? you've just talked about six of the players on the field out of 22. And that's not every position. That's barely a quarter of the people on there. So it's a bit weird. So I've always thought football is beautiful because of everything goes into it, and defense is part of that. So going back to what we talked about at the start of the show, I learned about football and it was really hard and it was really complicated and I didn't really have anyone to teach me it very easily. So I learned about all of it. And I thought defense was really interesting, and certainly in the sports where I came from, played a lot of rugby when I was a kid, defense was a big part of it, and that was interesting to me. And I was watching early noughties Patriots and Teddy Bruschi and Mike Vrabel and Richard Seymour and all those guys, and I thought that was naturally part of it. So it feels really weird that anybody would just ignore that part of football.
I think as well, if you want to learn about football, then playing IDP is almost essential, I would say, as to learning about football, because there are two sides to the coin, and if you learn about both sides, you know more about that coin. Yeah. So if you play IDP, whether you know about it or not, you will learn about it through the process because you have to select players. So I think it is the factor that nobody knows about it, and it's such a closed circuit thing, IDP, that people are scared to open it up.
Yeah, quite often, if you are somebody who doesn't play IDP, why not? They can say, oh, I'm like super hardcore fantasy guy. Oh, cool, do you play IDP? No. And you go, why not? And they go, well, it feels like there's so much to learn. I've got to learn. I've put so much time into it already. I can't do it. Which is fine. Okay, frankly, I don't believe you. But okay, I get it. But those same people are telling you to listen to them and having their opinions on matchups. You shouldn't trust this guy because he's going up against a good defense or a bad defense. Well, you just said you didn't understand about it and you'd have to learn loads. So should I trust you or should I not trust you? And it goes back to your point there, mate. You've got to know both sides. And if you don't know both sides, then you're missing a massive piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that's really key with IDP and the biggest objection I get to it is either don't know or, you know, I think the one biggest factor, and I would say this with IDP, is, and what prohibits people is, what fantasy football did very, very well was came up with a very simple standardized scoring. And I appreciate we've now got loads of variants. It's 2020 and you can play and mix up any score. But you could sit there and very easily look at a box score and work out your fantasy points from a perspective of standard scoring. With IDP, and I've played IDP with many different people in many different leagues, there is no standard scoring. Because no matter what you try and do with the scoring, there always seems to be one position that manages to be completely, in my view, wrongly evaluated. Either you put too many points for tackles or not enough points for sacks. So you make either linebackers extremely like overpriced. Basically, you just have to get a whole squad of linebackers. And then at the same point, you just say, well, tackles are important, but passes defended is not, or something like that. So you make corners completely irrelevant. Oh, well, I didn't need to draft them. I just pick them up off free agency because they're all kind of the same outside of the top three or four guys. And I think it's the biggest challenge to me for IDP players is, if you sit there and try and explain the scoring and trying to figure out, because the immediate thing is, and from people's limited knowledge or basic knowledge of the game, is edge rush is most premium position. Hardest to find you know, in terms of an elite talent, they're the ones that make the difference. Because again, people judge that sacks is the most important when we know now it really isn't. But so people go and buy, well, okay, I'm going to go and get, you know, edge rushers, and you can get some, you see people overdrafting edge rushers in so many leagues. And it then leads to people getting frustrated because, well, I drafted, you know, an elite player, or I've drafted Von Miller. Von Miller, for example, is a great player who's just not a great fantasy asset. And the same with, oh, I know Jalen Ramsey. I'm going to draft Jalen Ramsey. A terrible fantasy pick. Like, you just, he's not going to produce whatever you need unless you're in some weird scoring where it works. So people draft names that they know, that they hear on Red Zone, and these guys just turn out to not be very good fantasy players. So with that in mind, and there's people that we're hoping to try and convert from this podcast, and I've probably done a really bad job of putting people off by saying this. what are some things to sort of alleviate those concerns to make it, I don't want to buy this whole, it's too hard, because there's the internet. It's not that hard. There's so much more information than what there was 20 years ago. But in terms of either creating an IDP league or joining an IDP league, what are some of the things that people can do to overcome this? I don't know who to draft. I don't know about the scoring. How do we fix the
scoring? It's a brilliant question. It's a really good question. Because people take it in a bunch of different ways. So let's start off with what I think is the core issue. So there are two schools of people in IDP. There are people who believe in balance, and there are people who believe in suspension of disbelief. And the balance guys are like, right, in my league, we start 9 offensive players, you know, 2 quarterbacks and 3 wide receivers and a tight end and 5, whatever the numbers are, right? So therefore, we need to have 9 defensive players. And I want them to all be equal. I want every player, every position to be about equal in value and to be traded between them. Lovely idea. Doesn't work. Doesn't work at all. And the fundamental difference is supply. So when we're talking about defensive players, there are 11 players on the field that we can pick with, and they're all valuable and interesting in different ways. When we're talking about offensive players in most fantasy, we've only got 6 players because we don't play with offensive lines. Now, fine, offensive line stats theoretically include in other positions, but it's a massive difference. So in let's talk about standard 12 team league, right? Let's say you start 2 running backs each. So you're starting 24 running backs every week. Maybe some in a flex position as well, but whatever, 24. And there are 32 teams. So in non-bye week, that's 24 out of 32 guys that you're all starting, whatever that is, close on to 3/4, something like that. Let's talk about safeties. So people will normally go, well, I've got 2 safeties. So I'll start 2 safeties. In your same 12 team league, that's 24 safeties. But actually, all of those 32 teams in the NFL are starting 2 safeties, and half of them are starting a 3rd safety and playing them most snaps anyway. So straight away, you've got whatever that is, 76, 78, and you're only starting 24 out of 78. So you're starting like 1 in 4 compared to 3/4. And it's a massive difference. Those things just don't match up. So if you assume that you want to keep it equal, it's not going to work, because the proportion of defensive players you're dipping into and using is very, very different to the proportion of offensive players that you're using. Now, if you go the other way and you say, well, it's a game, it's a non-suspension of disbelief, this is very Bertolt Brechtian, we want to make a game, we want to make it fun for people, then you can do that, but it's a very different experience. And I would advise not doing that through scoring. So generally people go, well, I want to change the scoring. So I want my top linebacker to score the same points as my top tight end. And I would say that's a bad idea. It seems to make sense. And I thought it for many years, but it doesn't really work out because distribution looks different. So if you look at running back, you normally get 2 or 3 running backs who are really good, and then quite a steep drop off. And then after 10 or 12 running backs, another steep drop off, and they're sort of, and then you get down into the bunch of receiving backs and the James Whites and a bunch of guys who have some good days, but they're not reliable. Not true in defense, because defense is fundamentally reactive. If you've got a really good running back or a really good receiver or a tight end, you go, we talked about the Chiefs earlier, I'm going to throw the ball 17 times to Tyreek Hill this week because he's my best player. Great. If you've got a really good linebacker, what are you can do, you say, I'm going to have him tackle 17 times? No, because the offense is doing it to you and they're attacking your weak points. They're going after the players they don't think can keep up. So the drop-off is very, very different. Your top linebacker is not much different to your 9th linebacker, and your 9th linebacker is not much different to your 24th. And your 24th is actually not much different to your 40th. So people look at linebackers and safeties and cornerbacks every year and go, well, how come you thought this guy was going to be 48th and he finished 5th? And that happens all the time because those differences are very small. Pretty rarely happens on the offensive side, actually. It does happen all the time. We're pretty bad at predicting, but much less. We've got much better idea of which running backs are going to get 20 carries a game versus which linebackers are going to get however many involved plays. So the way to do it is not scoring, because if you ramp up the top guy at every position, you're going to end up with 30 guys that score as much as the top five linebacker. And so there's no scarcity, right? Everyone's just got one, and it just depends who's good every week. I always liken it to kicker. So if you started three kickers a week, then everyone would have good kickers, but it would just feel random because one guy gets 20 points and one guy gets five. And there's no way you could see it. It's just they all score similar. So that variance happens. What's better is to use numbers of starters. So I would suggest your offensive starters, however many you got, 6, 7, 9, 10, something like that, probably add on 50% for defense. And because you want to try and create scarcity through that. So your individual defenders will score less than the individual offensive counterparts. But overall, I'd go for balance. So I want my, let's say it's 9 offensive players, and every week together they score 200 points, and I'll have 15 defensive players, and every week together they'll score 200 points. And that's generally where you get much in more interesting balance. Now, the problem with that is you lose that suspension of disbelief. You don't feel like a GM anymore, because it feels really gamified and you're starting 15, but there's only 11 NFL players on the field. You know, people talk about realistic. They go, you've got to have realistic defense with 2 cornerbacks and 2 safeties. Like, that's what defenses look like. But of course, I'm fine starting 3 running backs and 7 tight wide receivers. It's really weird. But
I'm with you.
You sort of lose one or the other. There is no perfect system where you can have both of those. It does not exist. You can't mess about with your scoring to make it equalized. Cannot be done.
It's the same with 1 QB leagues. Quarterback. I mean, this year we'll see a bit of a bounce back, but effectively...
Yeah, I mean, people resist. I resisted Superflex for years because it feels weird. There's only one quarterback on the league. But if you have one quarterback, then all your quarterbacks don't have any value. And if you have 2, then they have value, but it doesn't feel realistic. Exactly the same thing.
Yeah. I think that's got to be the route that people need to think about, because IDP is a lot of fun. You learn a lot. Like, I just started playing IDP, I think, about 10 years ago, and that really kickstarted my knowledge on just actually wanting to watch defenses and wanting to see, because I wanted to get an edge. I wanted to know, because it's not the names, it's not the star names that are the big fantasy. Yes, okay, a few of them are. Aaron Donald, if he gets 20 plus sacks, is going to be good. But it's not the star names. There'll be so many guys in IDP who put up amazing amounts of points that probably the average NFL fan has probably never heard of. And that's why I like it, because it's so quirky.
It's just different. What quite often happens, another objection that people have will go, well, I don't want the bad players to be rewarded, because they've got this idea that, you know, bad players get more tackles because the offense goes after them. Not really true. Marlon Humphrey, right? Marlon Humphrey, all pro player, brilliant defensive back. I think he was the 3rd most targeted player in the NFL this year. He was massively gone after. And all the time the NFL goes after really good players because they don't really think about it that way. So it's just different. It's not that good players in IDP score more points. It's not that bad players in the IDP score more points. It's just a different system. And that's true on offense as well, right? So tight end. Is Darren Waller the 2nd best tight end in football? I don't think he is. He puts up the 2nd best numbers because he gets 2nd most targets, and that's sort of the offense he's in, the environment he is.
But don't get me started on tight ends in fantasy football.
I don't think Darren Waller's very good, but he puts up those numbers. And then running back, we've already talked about, right? You can easily... James Robinson in Jacksonville. Now, I know a lot of people are huge fans of him. I think he's fine. I think he's okay. I don't think he's a bad player. I don't think he's a spectacular player. It's just they gave him however many touches it was, over 300. And you're going to look good, unless you're Kalen Ballage.
We Kalen Ballage. Good. We see it though, especially when you're watching Red Zone and stuff. If you're not playing IDP, you could almost have a black line across the top half of the telly where the defense is situated, and if that moved up and down with the defense and you were only watching the offensive people the balls, you wouldn't really mind because you're only interested in the offensive side of the ball. So it's I love it because it makes me watch both sides of the ball, but it needs to be like Murph said, the scoring makes it very difficult for someone just to plug in an IDP league and go after it. But the trouble is, you mentioned that that's never really going to be a thing until it is standardized across the NFL board. And that's never going to happen, right?
It's not going to happen. People are interested in different stuff and people value. There are still a load of people that think tackles are really important. Now, my point of view on tackles, it's not really something a player does. It's something that happens to them. But still, masses of football fans think that a lot of tackles means good player. I just disagree with that, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, I'm with you. It's, you know, particularly bad teams are going to have players that have lots of players that get lots of tackles because they're really bad. If you give up a lot more plays, you're on the field ball.
That's another one of those things. So volume is one of those things that I've been talking about for years. I've been trying to work out quite a lot because we all think that worse defenses play more plays. I don't think it's true. I think actually, again, correlation is pretty bad from bad teams and good teams playing a lot of volume. There's lots of examples on both sides. So we sort of, it's very easy to make it look that way, but I'm not sure it's true. But it's just one of those weird things that's not very intuitive. And defense, we understand so badly. We've got a really bad idea of which things are true. Even just in the last 10 minutes, we've sort of said, the pass rush is pretty good, right? If you're a good pass rusher, you'll put up more pass rushing stats. And that's pretty true. Even if you get a bad pass rush, it gets a load of volume. Benson Mayoa, Tano Passignon, both of those played a ton this year and were absolutely terrible. Jarran Reed led all interior. Linemen in pass rush snaps, and it was terrible this year. But it's really hard to do. Other positions, safety and linebacker in particular, it's really easy to do. You can play a lot and put up big numbers. So Greg Williams is a great example. Greg Williams piles out his linebackers, right? He picks his two best linebackers and goes, you, sir, are playing 1,100 snaps this year, which is a ton. And then Alec Ogletree put up stupid numbers under him, and people were really convinced Alec Ogletree was a good player. He never was. He was a good pass rush. He was a bad player. But those things sort of persist for years.
It's just that last 45 seconds, Tom has pointed out that there's format, strategy, trends, stars, regression candidates, positional depth we haven't even touched on. So I'm glad I asked you to come back because we were never going to get covered in the time we had today. So, yeah, I'm pleased you definitely said yes to coming back.
Look, we do. I've nearly finished my biggest project for the offseason. Nearly finished. It's taken me ages. So one of the things in defense, I'd love your opinion on this. I'll send you over some stuff. It's basically defensive scheme is really, really badly understood. So in the great football world, they think there's two defenses, there's 3-4 and 4-3, and that's it. And all of those look the same. And that's clearly not true. We talk about dime and nickel with the understanding that every dime package looks the same and every nickel package looks the same, and it's not true. So I think we're pretty bad understanding defenses, and I firmly include myself in that. I've been watching it for decades and I'm still pretty bad at it. So what I'm trying to do is do some real work and try and make it pretty understandable what all those defenses look like this year. So look, I'll send it over to you guys when I'm done, and let's come back and talk about what that looks like.
That would be really interesting. One last question I've got, Tom, before we do dive off. Quite a lot of that's not true at all. Defensive understanding, how much of it in the general game do you think comes from playing Madden? And that's just because some people don't watch the defensive side of the ball, whereas if you play Madden, you have to do both if you're into it. And I know that most of the decent Madden players I know don't play defensive line when they're playing. They play linebacker or safety because they can see the whole field, whereas people who don't know defense select what Madden tells them to play, play linebacker, defensive end, sorry, and try and get after the quarterback because that's the easiest thing to do on Madden. Do you think that's the same sort of thing with IDP, whereas they see these shiny toys and think, that's all I know, that's where I'm going to get after this. But if you happen to play another position on Madden, you get a better understanding of it.
It's a really good question. Broadly, yes. I think that is how people believe. But the true answer is so complicated. So my understanding of defense is sort of medium, right? I'm an intermediate guy. So I'm not going to sit here and give you the names of every variation on a stunt or a twist or exactly all that sort of stuff. But I'm pretty good at understanding personnel packages, and I can tell you the difference between a cover two and a cover six, and that sort of thing. But you can go as deep as you want, right? You can go crazy deep. And the reason why defense has been terrible in 2020 is because it is fundamentally a weak link system, your defense is only good as the worst person out there. So if you're a safety or a linebacker and you're integral to your zone shell coverage and you don't know what you're doing, then you ruin the whole thing. So that's why people like Willie Gay and Davion Taylor just weren't on the field that sort of year. So going back to Madden, you can have the most impacts if you're controlling one of those. How well that actually recreates the NFL, I'm not totally sure, because that is telling us, as you know, a person with agency, with a control, and I want to go out there and do things because that's how gaming works. If you make the right decision, you can change this play. I don't think that is how defense works. I think it's, in real life, it's much more a case of don't mess up your assignment and your responsibility and the whole defense will remain strong. Going back to how we talked about the Buccaneers earlier, good example of that sort of defense, rather than, you know, your safety or linebacker is a freelance and you need to go out and make it happen. The idea of defensive playmakers, I think it's probably a bit overblown. I'm not sure I answered the question there.
To be fair, the way I worded the question, I'm not sure there was an actual answer. So we'll call it evens. Tom, look, listen, I've got so many more questions about IDP that you're coming back whether you want to or not. We'll organize that. Murph will get that sorted out. But before you do come back, why don't you let Rush Nation know where they can find you, where you can find your articles, and wherever you are in the world.
Thank you very much. So you can find me mainly hanging around on Twitter. So you can find me at Tom Kislingberry. The great news, I'm the only Tom Kislingberry in the world. The bad news, you can't spell it and you'll get it wrong. So don't worry about it. You can probably track it down to search for IDP and my name will come up. But apart from that, the work I do is mostly at DLF, Dynasty League Football. You can find me over there talking about various things. Or Gridiron, UK mag, the finest NFL mag in the UK. I write a monthly column in there and do some bits and pieces. So you should buy it. You should read it. It's good.
It's very good. Vouch for that. I have a subscription, so
good man. I'll pass that on to Josh and Liam. They'll be very happy.
Definitely.
This ended the way Murph started it with Pirate. Tom went R as he talked about the Gridiron subscription there by Murph. Murph has celebrated his Monday by the Buccaneers making the Super Bowl. And I'm along for the ride. Tom, thanks so much for coming on. We will chat really soon. Big man, you go get yourself some sleep. Lee, behind the glass, thanks for everything again today. And as always, Rush Nation, don't forget, keep rushing.
HIV epidemic is not over. HIV is still here.
The face of HIV is so diverse.
The biggest thing to reduce HIV stigma is just to talk about it. Testing and PrEP and HIV treatment and how effective it is today.
Undetectable equals untransmittable. Whether you're positive or negative, there's not a wrong door. Whether it's testing or whether it's treatment, do it for you, Montgomery County.
Learn more about HIV testing, treatment, and prevention at doitforyoumc.org.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.